He got the giggles, bud.
I do.
Just let him out.
Just like a fart.
You're not helping. Stop throwing fuel on the fire.
Doesn't a big fire burn faster?
Oh, God. An historic race, historic rain, and a historic winner. That's just one way you can sum up a historic weekend for NASCAR as they raced in the streets of Chicago for the first time last weekend. I'm Daniel McFadden, host of Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And we're going to talk about the Grant Park 220. And there's a lot to talk about. And with me, as always, is my friend and co-host, Jared Haas. Jared, what did you think of the Grant Park 220 and the weekend that was in the Windy City?
I feel like you could just fill a whole encyclopedia of what happened this weekend. You were there.
I was there.
I heard about a little excursion you had. You got lost in Chicago.
We're not going to get into that. That was a night. Anyway, but
just to clarify, he just took a wrong turn with the group and he got lost with the Uber.
No, I walked across the street and they didn't say anything and they went like this way and I looked around and they weren't there.
They that they mentioned is Brian Nolan and Michael Massey. So yeah. For frontstretch.com.
Yeah. Anyway, but yes. Anyway, back on topic. Chicago, NASCAR. I was there. It was in an... I ran out of words during the course of the weekend to describe what I experienced, what I was seeing. Because, like, we talked about this last week. A month ago, I was in the backwoods of North Carolina in Wilkes County at North Wilkesboro Speedway. And now I was in downtown Chicago getting ready for NASCAR Cup cars on the streets. It's even now it's weird saying it. So... Yes, I was there. So, but let me get your perspective, Jared. Just sum up what you thought of the weekend in general with NASCAR.
There's a lot of learning experiences that NASCAR had, and I think we're going to get into this with, you know, some of the topics that we're talking about. But an overall success, and especially on the TV front, the new experience with Chicago. You always see the scenes that were coming from the track of people just watching the race from like the trees or outside the track or buildings. Hopefully it was an overall good experience to bring racing downtown to them. We'll see. As soon as Monday morning rolled around, they were starting to tear down the track and have traffic going. So, you know, like I said, take it as what it was. Considering the circumstances, overall it was a success. But I think NASCAR's learned some valuable lessons with this experience.
Yeah, this was, I think, almost an unqualified success, but it... We have to stop and like appreciate how close we came to not witnessing what we saw Sunday night and Shane Van Gisbergen winning his first NASCAR Cup start at like 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon. You could float a tire down pit road. That's how bad it was for all day. Sunday was a rain front was basically like a hurricane circling over Chicago. This is on me. Saturday night, I didn't look up the weather to see how bad the rain could potentially be. I woke up in our hotel room there, a short distance from O'Hare, and opened up the blinds on our window. Brian and Massey, they hadn't even bothered to look outside. So we both looked outside at the exact same time, and it's just rain everywhere, rain covering everything. It is pouring. It's like, oh boy, this is going to be a day.
That's the lake effect for you. And growing up in the Midwest, there's just things that just hover around Chicago. One of the, you know, unexpected rains, and that's what sometimes just happens in the Midwest. You just get a dumping after even being in a drought session that Northern Illinois was experiencing. But I was impressed too. I was, like I said, I was seeing those scenes like there were some of those pictures. I'm like, there's tires that are like, you know, I think there was a stack of tires I saw on social media.
In the water
was like up halfway on the first tire. And I'm like, that is thick. And even Colleague Racing, I think, had a post where they had their camera underwater and then they lifted up. And
I didn't
see
that.
Pit road. I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, we ain't going to get this in at all.
No, okay, so according to the National Weather Service in Chicago, by 12:10 p.m., Chicago O'Hare had received 2.27 inches of rain. And that was the new record for July 2nd, at least at that point, at that section of the city. The previous record was 2.06 inches in 1982 on July 2nd. That's just by noon. Overall, the entire day, that O'Hare saw 3.35 inches of rain. Meanwhile, in other parts of the city, like there was a park that was like, I don't know, 5-10 blocks west of where the track was, that got up to 8 inches.
Oh, I believe it. I mean,
8 inches.
But it's still, I think, like I said, there was a report that NASCAR was only 15 minutes away from canceling. Ironically, the storm just moved out as it cycled in, it cycled out. They were able to dry it enough to start on the wet tires.
Yeah.
And we were able to kind of witness kind of like almost two races almost with the wet. You had Christopher Bell and Tyler Reddick were the two top drivers, and then all of a sudden...
And Shane Van Gisbergen
was
third.
Yeah, SVG.
SVG.
SVG was third, and then as soon as that track dried off, he was just, you know, another zip code. He was in Michigan by everyone else was racing in Illinois. He was long gone in the dry conditions.
Well, at one point, before I think the third caution, or maybe the second one, I can't remember which one, there was a 13-second gap between Shane in third and Michael McDowell in fourth.
Yeah.
That's how good those front three cars were.
Mm-hmm.
And then you took out Reddick, got into a wreck. Bell got caught up and stuff. And so then, that last, 20 laps or so, it's Shane marching up through the field on 16-lap newer tires compared to some of the guys who were up at the front.
But I was impressed, though, with the drivers that were up front that used that strategy, Justin Haley and Chase Elliott and Kyle Busch as well. They used their pitch strategy to stay up front, and they didn't really fall back at all.
No, they didn't. No.
But Shane Van Gisbergen was just able to slice through the field.
Like, just give, even knowing he was on newer tires, that march to the front was one of the most impressive things I've seen.
Larson, I think, was on the same strategy. He finished fourth.
Yeah. But he just, it was like they were nothing. It was incredible. And so just for people just tuning in, Shane Van Gisbergen made his first career NASCAR Cup start. He won it. He is a 34-year-old native of New Zealand who competes full-time in V8 supercars in Australia. He won for Trackhouse Racing as part of Trackhouse's Project 91, which is its goal is to bring international motorsport stars to America and show them off in the Cup Series. And so far, it's the first two starts for this project was with Kimi Raikkonen, the former Formula One champion. So he's the first non-Formula One driver to get a shot at this, and he just blew the doors off of everyone. He had the fastest single lap in practice on Saturday, qualified third, and he even then he said he wasn't fully comfortable in the car, and to do what he did Sunday is incredible, because we Jared for years back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a thing called road course ringers, and they teams would bring in like Boris Said, Ron Fellows.
We even had the open wheel invasion: Juan Pablo Montoya, Dario Franchitti, Sam Hornish.
Yeah,
I mean,
they would come in for those two
accomplished drivers. Yeah. I mean, these drivers were accomplished, and you had these drivers that came in, and some of them
for two races a year. Yeah. Sonoma and Watkins Glen. That was it in that era.
Yeah, and they would come in. Some of them would contend. Ron Fellows won some Xfinity and some Truck Series races, but none was in the Cup Series. Usually there was just a Cup Series driver that was able to handle those heavier type of cars. But I think with the V8, with his V8 background, with the heavier experience with that, that parlayed into right to this next-gen car and being a contender basically from the drop of practice to the end of the race.
It, like I said, we mentioned all those guys. They never won except Juan Pablo Montoya, and you also had Marcos Ambrose, who was also a supercars guy. They won races, but they never came in instantly and did it.
Yeah,
Boris said never won a cup race. Ron Fellows never won a cup race.
Scott Pruitt.
Scott, yeah, thank you, Scott Pruitt. But SVG comes in day one, weekend one, wins. That says a lot. Yeah. I know that this car has changed things. That makes it more adaptable. But to do what he did, to be the first Cup driver in 60 years to win your first start, it was incredible. And it's you see the pictures of people lining the front stretch and celebrating it. Like, it was a huge moment.
Yeah, I mean, track houses, this is their way that they're trying to invest back in the sport, is this Project 91, bringing other series back into NASCAR, people that are interested because of the bad taste, you know. Those drivers that you've mentioned, they didn't really have that success to stay within the sport.
Yeah.
I mean, remember Scott Pruitt tried to run full-time with Cal Wells' tied team in 2000. You had, you know, Dario Franchitti, IndyCar champion, didn't really, you know, pan out in the Cup Series. Same with Sam Horner, same with those other drivers. And I think this just gives a little bit more solid footing to say, hey, Project 91, invest in our team. Let's have this driver is like, hey, accomplished in V8, but he's also can do stuff well in NASCAR.
So, no, just this is an unbelievable performance. And I, after the race, Kyle Busch came to the media center, and he said he believed that because of his experience in V8 supercars, that Shane had like 4 to 8 years on all the full-time Cup guys because of what he's experienced in that car and how it's somewhat similar to the Cup car. So I asked Shane that, like, do you think that's an accurate assessment? And so here's his response and like him describing like just how different this was for him.
Daniel McFadden, friendchurch.com. Kyle Busch was in here earlier, and he said it was his assessment that because of your experience with V8 supercars, that you have 4 to 8 years on the full-time Cup guys when it comes to driving this next-gen car because of their similarities. So just based off of like a week of driving this car, do you think that's anywhere close to a accurate assessment?
I don't really know the answer, but it definitely a street circuit I'm more comfortable in, and I come back next year, a lot of those guys will be quicker, but the way the car achieves its speed is very different with the aero under the floor rather than over the top with the spoilers and wings like we have. So yeah, riding on the bump stops here, it was crazy like how bumpy this track was, but it's so powerful, the underfloor, that they do everything they can to activate it. So you can see everyone just hitting the bumps and riding so hard. Whereas we in Australia run so high and soft to try and make the car compliant. So very different philosophy. And then of course the rear diff, we have a lock diff, and this car has, you know, an open one, and it just turns so much better than what we have. So yeah, huge differences in cars, but I think the street races, you know, the more they do here, the better they'll get. You could see guys leaving a lot on the table on corner exits to the wall where I wasn't afraid of getting close, yeah.
So Project 91, it's the brainchild of Justin Marks, the co-owner of Trackhouse Racing. To do what Trackhouse has done in just the last 2 years, it now has five wins, three with Ross Chastain, one Daniel Suarez, and now SVG. Justin Marks is quickly becoming a force in NASCAR. Just 6 years ago, Jared.
Yeah, he was more of a mid-pack driver, just someone that's just trying to hum along here, and he wanted to make a team that was, you know, going to disrupt the system. You've seen it from, like, you know, how he performs, even like his haulers, for example. He has TV screens on the back of his haulers, kind of had a display. I'm looking at Justin Marks' career. I mean, you look at a Cup Series, only six starts. Xfinity, 36 starts, one win, seven top tens.
Yeah, the most starts he ever made in a season was – in the Xfinity season was 17 – and
Truck Series was
2016.
18.
Yeah.
So, yeah, more or less a journeyman driver that's said, okay, you know what? I've experienced racing. How can we turn it on its head? And, you know, Ross Chastain's the perfect driver for that. Ironically, you know, aforementioned, Ross Chastain replaced Justin Marks in the truck series. So he kind of understands the ins and outs of racing. Now with the partnership with Pitbull, he's able to make this dream a reality. And, you know, that's another reality of bringing this outside superstar, see how he stacks up with the Cup Series. And he beat them all on Sunday.
Yeah. Just think about just 6 years ago, he was co-owner of H. Scott Motorsports Canon East team. And that kind of seemed like all he was really up for. And then here he is now as part of...
his legacy is already greater than his driving career.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's a great way of putting it. Like he's leaving his footprint on this board. So here's Justin Marks talking about the significance of this win for Trackhouse.
Well, this is an incredible win for the company. It definitely ranks up there. It's different. I mean, it's, and I'm still sort of processing it, to be honest, because it's so new right now. But I think it's important in the sense that, you know, it's a lot of what we're trying to do at Trackhouse is new and different and exciting for the sport. We're trying to inject something into the sport that it hasn't seen before, that the fans haven't seen before. And so I think, you know, it's really important because it comes out of that creativity that we all share and the passion that we have in trying to put something out on the racetrack that's really unique and compelling. And it's kind of a, you know, it's not a crazy idea. Like people have done this before, but to put a brand on it and to actually, you know, build a group around it that, you know, Darian leads and go to the company and say, hey, this is an idea that we want to do. And it's actually like a unit in the company. I mean, to put that into Victory Lane it's hard to find the words for it because it's so different. Like it doesn't put anybody in the playoffs. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't really do any of that, but it's a credible moment for the fact that we are trying to be a special team that's different and compelling and exciting for the fans and, you know, for an idea, a concept that I came to these guys with and said, you know, would you take this on? Would you do the extra work and take this on, and for them to embrace it and then to put it in Victory Lane is really, you know, it's sort of like anything is possible. Like if you can dream it, you can do it. And that's kind of my emotions. It's hard because it's just a little bit different because, you know, obviously Shane's not a full-time driver. It's his first ever race. It's not a full-time team. There's no playoff implications. There's, you know, nothing like that, but it's just a great moment for our company and for Chevrolet and for Enhance Health and for us as a group that's excited about just sort of doing unique, different things.
So I got another clip from Justin Marks, and this time I asked Justin, what was the timetable for getting SVG into this car? Like, did he reach out to SVG? Did he reach out to Justin? Here's what he had to say about SVG and why he thought he was the perfect choice to compete in this race in the number 91 car. Daniel McFadden, FrenchTrips.com. Justin, I'm curious, like, through this whole process with Project 91, you've said that you've reached out to drivers have reached out to you to be a part of this. I'm curious, with Shane, like, how did this relationship start? Did you reach out to him first? Did he express his interest? Like, what was the timetable that led to him being in this car last weekend in that test at Charlotte?
So I reached out to Shane last fall, probably like the end of last year, through a mutual friend, just said, hey, you know, I'm Justin and we got this Project 91 deal and you know, you're sort of on the short list here, and I called him and I think we FaceTimed or we talked to each other, whatever, and I said, hey, you know, I would love to be able to run you. You know, it's we have to get sponsorship. Obviously, it's commercial driven, so we have to do our job here to get this thing funded. And if we get it funded and get the right people behind it, where I can make the phone call, then I'll call you. And then, you know, 4 or 5 months went by and he didn't hear from me. And, you know, we ran Kimmy at COTA and Enhanced Health signed on to sponsor the program. They said, you know, go get whoever you want. And then that's like the coolest phone call you get to make is to call Shane and say, hey, you want to come race for us? We got a seat for you. And he was all about it. And it was just about, you know, figuring out the logistics. And so it was important, you know, the supercar series in Australia was something that was really on my radar kind of from the get-go in Project 91. And, you know, Shane was the guy. He was like the first person, the only person really that I thought of. So I reached out right away and said, hey, I'm not offering you a ride yet, but I'm working on it. And if I can get to a place where I can call you and make the official offer, then I will. And that was able to happen this spring.
So why was he the first person to thought of?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, if you look at cup racing on, especially with this new car on the street courses, you know, there's, if you look around the world, the closest thing that there is to the NASCAR Cup Series anywhere in the world on road courses is the Supercar Series. I mean, the cars are very similar. And you know, the talent there is unbelievable. Obviously, we had Marcus Ambrose in the series for a number of years. You know, Scott McLaughlin came over and won in the IndyCar series. And then, you know, when you look at, you know, Scott Dixon and you, the guys from that part of the world, I mean, there's so much talent over there. And I just sort of thought of it as like kind of an untapped resource. And so, you know, really it was because it's, you know, it's difficult to take a guy like Kimi Raikkonen, who's raced, you know, Formula One, and put him in a full-bodied stock car. Obviously, incredible talent, but there's a lot to learn there. Whereas, you know, Shane's had a lot of experience in cars like this, and so I figured, you know, if a guy like him could come over and we could put the program together like we have for Project 91, that he could get to speed really, really quickly and be able to contend.
All right, so Jared, before we get into like a recap of like who finished in the top 10 and all that, where does NASCAR go from here with the unqualified success of the first Chicago Street race? And
you'll be like the Cup Series race. You'll eventually get it out, right? Where does it go? You know, it's going to be tough considering the fact it was on the fence. Chicago seems to be warmed up a little bit more after this race, but I think they need 180 days before the decision is made if they're going to continue that contract. I think the biggest thing is, you know, making conditions, the logistics of everything, making sure that it's beneficial to both NASCAR and the city that they're wanting to race into. Because the reality of the situation is NASCAR is coming into the street course. This isn't like, oh, tomorrow the street course will be in here, we can delay it. No, this is going to be, you know, this is going to have to be torn down sooner rather than later so that residential traffic comes here. So logistics is going to be the biggest thing that NASCAR has to learn from this going forward.
But the thing that really impressed me with the turnout for the race was like, I've been to so many NASCAR races where it rains, it gets delayed, and then fans leave. And then they don't really come back for when the race actually starts.
But also, too, I think that what's beneficial to that is you're right in downtown.
Yes.
There's a lot more things to do.
Yeah.
If you, like Nashville Super Speedway, for example, if you're in a rain, it's not really anything near the track that's like within walking distance.
Yeah.
You're already back at the hotel, and then if the race comes back, you have to make the effort to go back in the track. Here, Chicago... Yeah. Which at least the nice part about this.
People live right there.
Yeah, people live right there. You can just go spend a day in the restaurant or wherever, a Starbucks, for example. I think that's where you guys did for part of the day was like Starbucks.
I didn't. I stayed in the media center all day Sunday. I did not have wet weather gear, so I couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So,
but you know, I think that's part of the reason why that people were able to stay is there was a lot more stuff to do around those tracks.
But yeah, like, we were a quarter of the way into the race, and there were still people streaming across the bridge right there in front of the Chicago Art Institute to going to the front gate. There was just a constant stream. So the rain didn't deter anyone. People were still curious about what was about to happen. They were excited, and they wanted to see it. You had people standing on top of L-train platforms.
Trees.
Climbing into trees just to get a glimpse of this race.
And that's what I've mentioned with NASCAR. You need to get butts in seats no matter what. that's the biggest thing going forward. And some of those people, sure, they'll probably, you know, you have race fans that paid a price to get those tickets, those higher end tickets or just a regular bleacher tickets. But there's also those people that can be curious of like, what the heck is this? And they want to see firsthand before they make that investment of going that. So I think it's a good window opportunity for those people, those first time fans, to interact with racing and see and be like, okay, what's going on here? This is pretty interesting.
Well, I want them to go back to Chicago for at least – they have a three-year deal. I know, you know, going into this, there were local politicians who weren't too excited about the deal that that had been put together between NASCAR and the city. You just got to think, after what we saw over this weekend, even despite the rain, the enthusiasm the city showed for it, you got to think that hopefully that – gets them to like, okay, fine, you can come back next year.
Let's see how the bureaucrats react, and let's see how the red tape's going. There is potential with this. I don't think this needs to be like six races a year.
No.
One, maybe two at most.
One in the first half, one in the second half would be
okay. You know, you don't need 10 street courses on this schedule.
No.
But I mean, it's, you know, it was a good experience, I think, overall. And even with my piece that I did with the ARCA race in Des Moines, a lot of people were all pretty happy with that street course as well. And that was a one-year deal. So we'll see what city is going to be interested in hosting a street course race. But, you know, hopefully, you know, NASCAR, this can be their kickstart.
All right. So moving on, let's just like recap the top 10 and how things shook out after the 75-lap race rather than 100 laps, because it was shortened in the middle of the race.
Let's go through the top 10. Obviously, you had Shane Van Gisbergen wins the race. You had Justin Haley finish second. Chase Elliott was third. Kyle Larson was in the fourth position. Kyle Busch, after getting into the turn six wall, finished fifth. Austin Cindric was sixth. Michael McDowell was seventh. Joey Logano was eighth. Ty Gibbs finishes ninth again. And Chris Buescher rounds out the top 10.
So, yeah, just some notes. Chase Elliott finished third through 11 starts on the season. He was suspended for one race, missed multiple races because of he broke his leg. He has five top fives and seven top tens and 11 starts.
And I found this stat out, too. Chase Elliott is higher in points than three of the four Stewart-Haas Racing cars.
That's bad.
Chase Elliott's 24th, Ryan Preece 25th, Eric Almirola 27th, and Chase Briscoe had his penalty, but he's 31st.
That's very bad for Stewart Haas Racing.
But good for Chase Elliott, and again, he's on pace. This is another race. He's overexceeding the pace to make it in the playoffs just by points.
Yeah, but he didn't get any stage points, though. So all he's got is what he finished with in that final stage.
34, but still it's ahead of the cutoff, and Alex Bowman finished last, and there was a few bubble drivers that had some issues. So overall, a good productive day for Chase Elliott for points. Not that one he needed, but something that at least consistent top fives can get him in.
Yep, he's 24th in points going into this weekend's race at Atlanta Motor Speedway. So Kyle Larson finished fourth. He has four straight top tens, and three of the last four results have been top fives. So he's going on a heat streak right now.
Hot streak.
Yeah, he's on a heater. That's what I meant to say. So Austin Cindric, he finished sixth. This is his first top 10 since COTA.
Back
in March or April. So that was a much needed result for that team.
Yeah, they've had their struggles, definitely. And you know, they at least figured out something where they finished in the top 10. Just a tough row with the number two team.
All right, and Michael McDowell, he finished seventh. And that was his fourth top 10 on the season and his second in the last three races because of his result at Sonoma two races ago. So pretty good stretch that McDowell's putting together. And Chris Buescher finished 10th. That's his eighth top 10 on the season. He's too shy of his career high of 10 that he set last year.
I think he's on a streak of like eight or nine top tens at road courses. He's a quiet little racer that can just clip away those top tens. And this is another example race. Chris Buescher not really making those headlines, but again, finished 10th and was able to get solid points in the bank.
So that just shows to you where RFK Racing is right now. They're steadily improving. I read a story last week that noted that, you know, hey, Brad Keselowski and Chris Buescher, they're like in the top 15 in points. Mm-hmm. It was like,
yeah, they are both. If the playoffs would start right now, they would both be in the playoffs.
So that's good for them. Good for RFK Racing. All right. So, Jared, you wanted to specifically talk about the Xfinity race on Saturday that was supposed to go in the Sunday, but then it didn't. So what is frying your egg?
Yeah, this fries Jared. My egg. Understandably, I get this with NASCAR. This is a learning experience. But, you know, you've got to expect the unexpected in this situation. And, you know, you can't really try to pile on two races in 2 days. And, you know, with the Xfinity Series race, they started it, completed 25 laps Saturday. Mm-hmm. And then the weather delayed it. They have street lights, but they're not for racing product.
Yeah.
So they're restricted to the daylight. Well, they got back the next morning, still that torrential downpour. That's in the middle of that rainstorm that we've had. And the drivers were sitting there for over an hour in their cars waiting for the command. And there was talks about, you know, just completed two laps to make it official. But in the end of the day, NASCAR just called the race right there. And a lot of teams were pretty frustrated, to say the least, because some of them, you know, they're expecting to go back green. They're not expecting a race to be called like that. You know, points are on the line. Cole Custer wins, you know, the race mm-hmm. without really completing half the distance. And you've got the logistics of this. The Xfinity Series team, they stayed an extra day. They had to pay for hotel rooms. They lost a day in the race shop with, you know, traveling back a day later instead, you know, traveling back Monday instead of Sunday. A lot of the Xfinity teams in the garage were frustrated with that fact. And looking back at the logistics of things, you know, they try to have that second series, but in reality, with the street course racing, one series is sufficient enough. I don't mind if you have a few extra practice sessions for those street course racing, considering the fact that, you know, it's not really like iRacing, that these tracks are going to be relatively consistent. This is the streets. There's a lot more wear and tear than a racetrack takes. So I think going forward, if the street course does happen with those 2 days they have, the Cup Series just needs to go there. Don't let Xfinity go there unless you want to expand the days of how many days you have the racetrack going up, because that's just disappointing for the teams spending all that extra money. I think
Jeremy Clement said he spent $1,500 just on hotel stuff.
That's for about one a set of tires. So. That's a set of tires for a team. And, you know, with those smaller teams, they're not operating, you know, they can throw a whole bunch of money at that situation. So it's a tale of two weekends with that. I mean, obviously Cup Series was a huge success, much needed, but the Xfinity Series kind of disappointing that's how it kind of ended with this situation.
Yeah. I agree with you. Like, when you have a big race like this, like the Cup Series should be the series that christens the track, like breaks the glass on the side of the ship. Mm-hmm. Not the Xfinity Series. The first cars you see on track should be the Cup cars, not the Xfinity guys.
And, you know, you can even fill in the time with a few more practice sessions as well, too. You know, I'd be curious to see how much more practice these teams needed to catch up with SVG, but you know, there's ways you can still fill in the weekend and not have just, oh, it's just this race and then the practice qualifying. I think you can still expand upon this weekend and not try to have another series on top of that too. So instead, you're just trying to run one race.
Yeah. But yeah, that was the disappointing part of the weekend. And it was just awkward because Cole Custer's coming in to do a press conference for a race that hadn't been active for 24 hours.
Yeah,
it is like, oh, so Cole, what'd you think of that race that was
that
a
just
day
happened?
Ago?
Yeah, and like I said, it wasn't handled properly, and again, the logistics issues, I think, is hopefully can be settled. And also, it was one in a billion rainstorm. They could have raced, you know, they race in the rain, but that was downpour they couldn't race in. But again, you got to be prepared for that situation. I think going forward, let's just prepare a weekend with one series at that track.
Like, I should have known this earlier. To put it in comparison, in perspective, the rain that we got on Sunday at O'Hare Airport, anyway,
in all of June, they recorded 2.36 inches of rain.
Or even better yet, they can do a straight course with the Cup Series in Chicago and then have Xfinity go into another straight course. That could be a possibility they play into with the 4th of July, but you just need one series at a city.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. That they wanted to get people bang for their buck, but unfortunately, that happened. So anyway, all right, that's enough of that. And that time to go on to our news roundup of the week. All right. News roundup time. So one note, a significant note about Chicago. I mean, I had high hopes that people would tune in for this race, but maybe not this kind of numbers. So the ratings for Sunday's Chicago race, despite the rain, despite it being kind of delayed, not significantly, but a little bit, it drew an average of 4.795 million viewers average on NBC. That was the network's most watched NASCAR Cup Series race in 6 years, since 2017, at Indianapolis.
I believe it. And I like to see this was a Sunday night race. I like to see how Atlanta compares with this weekend coming up being a Sunday night race compared to Sunday afternoon, how much more they tune into.
Oh, no, I looked that up yesterday. I believe the July Atlanta race got like 2.3 million last year. And that was in the middle of the day. It wasn't a night race, so this is going to be kind of different. But that's so many people. Mm-hmm. 4.7 million compared to the Daytona 500 in February got 8 million ish. This race got more viewers than the second race of the year at Auto Club following the Daytona 500. So the only other race that beat this one in viewership was the Daytona 500.
I believe it. I think this even beat the Indy 500 this year.
Oh, I believe so. So that's just incredible. Like this should not be happening, you know, at this point in the season.
No.
To have these kind of numbers is kudos to NASCAR for doing this. Kudos to the promotion that NBC did. I saw all throughout the city over the weekend banners or whatever on side of buildings and stuff like that promoting the race. At pretty much like every bus stop was an advertisement for the race. This was the most streamed NASCAR Cup race in NBC Sports history, with 163,500 viewers across Peacock and NBC Sports digital platforms. Also, by comparison, the previous week, NBC's first race at Nashville, that got 3.2 million average. So you're getting like 1.4 million more, which I want to know what this rating would have been if it had been like the first race.
Yeah, I was curious to see how this was, especially being a 4th of July weekend. You know, this is catching those people that tuned in right at late, a holiday weekend. So, I mean, it's curious. You know, there's a lot of factors, I think, that could play into it. And, you know, there's variables that could have been, you know, was this the night race that helped? Was it the 4th of July weekend that helped? Possibility. But, I mean, overall, it's, a good thing to see good ratings.
And the rating in Chicago itself was 9.29, which I believe means, like, basically 10% of TVs in Chicago were tuned to this race. That's three times more than the number who tuned in for the Daytona 500 in Chicago.
Yeah.
I want to know how much of that was because people were stuck inside with the rain.
Could be a possibility. I feel like NASCAR's defining moments come into most bizarre weather.
Well, no, I brought this up on our Front Stretch Slack. Things like, is this comparable to the 1979 Daytona 500? Which is a dumb question to ask because we don't know what the long-term impact of this race is going to be. But it felt like a perfect storm, literally. Like
I think it's not as the big size as was CBS, but I think it could be, you know, you could see the impact in Chicago.
So, yeah,
I would love to know what those numbers would have been like if not for the rain.
Yeah.
Like what would that have been? So all right. So one other small note in news. It was announced today, Wednesday, that Marco Andretti, IndyCar driver, will be making a start in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series at Mid-Ohio.
This weekend, yes.
This weekend.
Spire Motorsports.
Yeah, he'll be driving the number 7 car on that road course in Ohio. I mean, I just think it's worth noting anytime someone named Andretti makes the crossover into NASCAR. He competed in the Xfinity race at Charlotte Roval last year?
Something like that. I think so. Yeah, I remember that. I think it was with Big Machine. I remember that correctly. Let me look that up here.
That sounds about right.
Also, too, as mentioned, I think there was a report out that Team Andretti was looking to get in the Cup Series, and Gainbridge's big sponsor with Andretti, they're sponsoring Spire Motorsports for, I think, quite a few races this year. So they're taking a lot of the remaining races. And, yep, Charlotte Roval with Big Machine Racing. That's right. Correct.
I think he had a DNF.
Yep, he crashed out.
All right. But, no, so hopefully he has experience at Mid-Ohio in the IndyCar Series, so hopefully that translates and he has a good day in the Truck Series, so tune in for that race. All right, so moving on now to our preview for this weekend's NASCAR Cup race at Atlanta Motor Speedway. All right, Jared, it is time for our first return trip of the NASCAR Cup Series season. This weekend, they're going to Atlanta Motor Speedway for Sunday's Quaker State 400, available at Walmart. That is the race's name, the Quaker State 400, available at Walmart. NASCAR is guilty of having pretty weird names, but that's a first. The sponsor, available at Walmart.
Still not as weird as the Bushy McBushy race 400 at Kansas a few years ago.
Wow.
How did you forget about that race?
Wasn't that like in 2020?
That was in 2021.
Oh, okay.
The Bushy McBushy race. Bushy McBushy race. Okay. Won by Kyle Busch.
Wow. I don't know how I forget about that.
I don't know either.
There was a contest for that.
Name that one was the Bushy McBushy race.
You could submit names, and that was... Wow. But no, nothing beats the names that have been given to, like, the Brickyard 400 and that name that takes you, like, an hour just to say.
Presented by Crown Royal, presented by Big Machine Records in honor of...
Yes. But no, anyway, Quaker State 400 available at Walmart. I actually had to look up who won the March race because I just completely forgot.
And those are the Fords. It was Joey Logano, Mr. Dominant there.
Yeah, Joey Logano won the race in March. He led 140 of 260 laps. He passed Brad Keselowski on the last lap after Keselowski had led like the previous 29.
You were impressed with that race. Remember that last 40 laps? You're like, my gosh, they ran to the finish without wrecking.
Hey, that is valid. That was completely valid.
I've unlocked so many memories for Daniel today.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to talk about here.
It's we're going super speedway racing again, the fourth time this year, the Atlanta Super Speedway winners since it's been in its current configuration have been William Byron, Chase Elliott, and Joey Logano.
Yes.
So at some point we're not going to be able to rattle those off. So enjoy it while you can. Three races, three winners. Corey LaJoie should be a favorite, I guess, for this race because he came within a lap of winning this race last year. He finished in the top five in this race in March. It's kind of weird. Corey LaJoie, he's a favorite.
And Atlanta is so bizarre because, again, since the repave, he's finished fifth in the spring race. He was in contention to win, unfortunately got wrecked out, finished 21st. And then, obviously, this past spring, he finished in fourth. So
he's two for three. Wow.
Two for three and was in contention for the third one as well. So it shuffles up the running order a little bit, but Corey LaJoie could be a good underdog pick if you're into betting. But, yeah, I think I have a good prediction, though, of who could another driver who could secure the win. But again, Fords have been I expect some Fords to shuffle up in the front of the field, like Logano and RFK Racing, to make their presence known at Atlanta this weekend.
So who's your pick?
But I'm not going to go with a Ford, though. I'm going to go with another driver who was performing well in 2022, but got a penalty late in the race in the spring race. And then this past spring race finished third. I'm talking about Christopher Bell, looking to get Toyota's first win in Atlanta since 2013.
Oh, wow.
They have not won there since then.
Okay, so my pick for the race is I'm just going to take Brad Keselowski. Like, he's due, and he had a great race there in the spring. He led 47 laps. Anyway, Brad Keselowski is my pick. So when it comes to tracks and reconfigurations and the record book, how do you feel about stats for, like, Atlanta in the super speedway section also falling under?
Yeah, they need to change it. They just need to call it Atlanta Motor Super Speedway or something like that.
Like, I don't like, he has such and such finishes at Atlanta. But, yeah, like, three of those were under, like, a different configuration.
Yeah.
It's like Richmond. Like, Richmond has been in its current configuration since 88, 89. Like, all the stats from 89 should not be falling into the same category as everything before that.
Yeah, I mean, when a track big changes like that, it should be different. I mean, you look at the spring pole race it here, pole speed was 177 miles per hour. And, like, compared to old Atlanta, look at 2015, pole speed 194.
it's
a different track.
It should be different categories. I don't know why they don't do that. I wish they would. Atlanta Super Speedway. Anything could happen.
Where can we watch it?
We can watch that at 6 p.m. Central Time on USA, which is, again, disappointing. You go from this huge audience on NBC, and then the next race, it's on a cable channel. So you're instantly
hindered by that. Yeah, there's not a ton of races in the summer stretch that are on NBC, except for the Indy Road Course and obviously Daytona. But even some of the playoff races, like the first four playoff races are on USA. And then the rest go on NBC.
So, yeah, and this race last year got where did it go?
I think you mentioned, like, 2.1 or
2.6 million viewers. So I'm very curious, even if it's on USA, coming off this huge bump from Chicago, if they can get above that number. But, again, it's I don't know what network or – whether that was an NBC or a NBCSN race. So I have no idea.
But, I mean, like I said, we'll see. Hopefully, like I said, a lot of people tune over from what they have saw last week in Chicago to this week in Atlanta.
So, all right. But that will do it for us this week on Dropping the Hammer. I'm Daniel McFadden. You can reach me on Twitter at Daniel McFadden. You know, if, you know, Elon Musk hasn't destroyed Twitter by the time this
I'm still here. I mean, it's still alive. People were rate limited, but you can still find me on Twitter at Real Jared Haas. We will make sure notify you if things change, but that is our main form of communication for the racing department. So
you can also email me at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. Please rate, subscribe, leave a comment for us. Let us know how you feel about it so others can find it. Also, if you're interested in general Arkansas news coverage here at the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, if you visit the webpage for this episode of the podcast, you'll find a link to a special offer for the first 2 months of your subscription. You get $5 for a month. So, cool thing. Do it. Help us out here. But anyway, I'm Daniel McFadden. This has been Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden. We will see you next week. Take care.